I want to start with why we're on this call together, why we wanted to host a webinar on college student hunger and the role that policy and advocacy play in this. As some context, in 2017, Swipe Out Hunger was involved with writing the College Hunger-Free Campus Act, which was the first piece of legislation that received funding to truly address college student hunger in the state of California statewide. And since then, we saw California, after California passed legislation, it grew to New Jersey, and New Jersey was able to also pass legislation sending $1 million to its campuses to fund basic needs programs. In California, over $20 million have now been sent to campuses to support with basic needs programs. And what we recognized was missing in this space was really the student voice and student advocacy. A lot of traditional policymakers were taking this issue on, and we knew that our students on the ground were passionate, were creating change on campus, and now we're trying to build a platform to give students a chance to raise their voices to the state and even federal level to create lasting change. We had an amazing policy workshop at our student summit just this past August. We got to hang out with students on this call, like Owen and Austin and so many other students from across the country. So seeing the response from our students and excitement around that, this webinar is really the next step in getting a chance to hear from some of our students and what's happening on the ground, which you'll get the chance to do shortly, as well as continuing our learning from policy experts and SNAP experts and anti-hunger experts from the field so that we have more resources to take back to campus. And really the goal is to position you all, both students and university administrators and community leaders, to be the ones at the front line, the ones that council people and policymakers and state legislators are taking meetings with, so that you can inform them based on your experience on the ground what truly needs to happen, not just to pass legislation, but to write things, to raise awareness in a way that actually meets what's happening on campus today. So two key goals: to advocate students, to activate students, to advocate for anti-hunger programs, not just things like the Hunger-Free Campus Bill, but overall things that support students' basic needs, and to empower students to know that you're the ones with the perspective and the action to take things to the next level. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to Maddie Albert-McCarthy, who is our Chief Strategy Officer and really who on our team has been leading this work and working with many of you all.
Thank you, Rachel. I'm wondering if the folks who weren't able to introduce themselves want to jump in and say hello. Austin, I think. Okay, at some other point. So basically the agenda for today is that we're gonna hear some updates from our student leaders, and then we have the pleasure of having Carrie Welton, formerly at CLASP, and Alana Davidson of the Massachusetts Department of Transitional Assistance here with us, and then we'll be able to open it up for Q&A as well. So first, I would love to hand it over to the University of Tennessee Knoxville students who are here with us. This summer at our student summit, we had SWIPE student leader Owen Flomberg join us from the University of Tennessee Knoxville. And since the policy workshop, he has galvanized the rest of his Swipe at Hunger team to join him in state advocacy efforts, which has been super exciting to work with all of them on. And I would love to turn it over to all of you to share some updates on the work that you're doing in Tennessee.
Yeah.
So I'm Owen, this is Kaylee here, and then we have,
sorry, that's Travis, and that's Ashlyn,
just so you see everyone. But yeah, so we've been working really hard here at the University of Tennessee to start to advocate not only to our administration, which we've been doing for years now, but also moving up kind of the chain of command, essentially, and starting to advocate about food insecurity to our Board of Trustees and now the state legislature. So we're a very, very conservative state, as you might have assumed, us being from Tennessee. So we've been really trying to frame this in a way that makes sense to state legislators, the Board of Trustees, and our administration that tend to be a little bit more leaning on the conservative side. So that's what I really enjoyed, getting to go to the conference, and we split up in groups, and there was a group of us that were all from universities in the Southeast, and we all talked about ideas of how to make advocating for policies that are addressing student food insecurity that are more palatable to you know, more conservative
lawmakers,
people that have the power. So something that we talked about is looking at subsidies, essentially, for tax breaks for on-campus food providers like Aramark. Should they keep their food insecurity levels below a certain rate? And we're talking with different people about developing a policy like that, because we love tax breaks in Tennessee, and and that's something that I think will have a lot of appeal. We're also just looking at mimicking some of the parts of the policy that I believe it was New Jersey talked about at the conference, of requiring institutions within their state to publish their food insecurity rates. So that's a policy point that we're trying to promote as a bill in the Tennessee Intercollegiate State Legislature. And Kaylee can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the state of Tennessee has a program, like you said, called Tennessee Intercollegiate State Legislature, that every university in the state gets representation at this conference every year. It occurs about a month before the actual legislature goes into session, and college students have an opportunity to pass legislation and then pitch it to real representatives to be passed in the real Tennessee government. So we're utilizing this really cool opportunity to try to pass some legislation about food insecurity at the conference and then try to pitch it to some of our legislatures. And we think this is a really cool way to do it, because it'll show not only the people in our campus, but also people on other campuses are really passionate about this issue about food insecurity. And so it will kind of give the issue a little bit more credibility to people who haven't heard about it beforehand, to see that there's support from schools all over the state. So that's kind of what we're doing with to try to get this legislation picked up by either the House or the Senate, is to do it through this collegiate program. Do you want to talk about the Board of Trustees a little bit too?
Yeah, so they've actually, I met with one of the representatives on the Board of Trustees last week, and they're really interested in discussing this issue and have invited us to give kind of a little presentation about it, because they're really looking at our retention rates at the university. When people drop out of the university, it's typically for a dollar amount between $500 to $2,000. And basically, we have the worst retention rate among comparable universities in the Southeastern Conference schools. So they've been talking a lot about that. So we are trying to point them in the direction of food insecurity is a big factor in students dropping out, or in some students dropping out, and this can be a solution for kind of improving those retention rates, and any sort of investment this area would hopefully be able to have a really big return. And we're trying to frame it in kind of that way so that they kind of understand where we're coming from. But yeah. And then Travis here will talk a little bit about just a real quick overview programming that we're doing to raise awareness.
Most of our programming, we're focusing on bringing awareness and advocacy amongst the community. And we're mostly focusing on Hunger and Homelessness Week this year, November 18th to 22nd. And we're going to put on events that mostly bring awareness to the issue. We're going to have speakers from our university's Department of Nutrition who conducted the study, where she found that one in three students in our campus were food insecure. She's going to give a lecture to bring awareness to that issue. And we're also looking into bringing other speakers
to bring awareness.
Yes, and then state reps to also some kind of a town hall type thing where students can talk to their state reps and advocate for daily food insecurity. And also other a video series, film festival to kind of show, to bring awareness to that issue as well.
Yeah. Ashton's gonna talk about some of the outreach we've been doing to other institutions in the state.
Yeah, so kind of as a part of the outreach team, we have, in partnerships, we have two branches of external and internal partnerships. So looking internally, we are
are, as a university, looking at partnering with some of our organizations that are already working to address food insecurity, such as the Grow Lab, which is an on-campus garden, and Smokey's Pantry, which is essentially a food pantry, open to any and all students and everyone. And then externally, we're looking at partnering with other universities within the Southeast and also within the state of Tennessee, specifically, that are, some of them do already have infrastructure in place to combat food insecurity, but others are interested or just beginning. So we're hoping to partner with these universities to kind of gather as a state and a region to make this more people more aware.
But yeah, so that's a little overview of what we're doing.
Amazing. Thank you all so much for sharing. And it's really cool to hear about kind of all of the different local opportunities that you all have been looking at for as a way to elevate the issue locally. And yeah, interested to see how that collaboration across the state will work as well. So thank you for all the work that you're doing. And now I would love to introduce Carrie Welton. Carrie is the first name that came to mind when we wanted to have this webinar because of her immense experience in advocacy. She was formerly a policy analyst at the Center for Law and Social Policy known as CLASS, and is an advocate for policy reforms that improve the lives of low-income folks and communities of color using a racial equity lens. So Carrie, thank you so much for being here today, and I turn it over to you.
Hi, Maddie. I'm happy to be here. Can you just confirm if you can see me and if I should turn on my video?
We can't see you, but we can hear you. So whatever you feel comfortable with.
Okay. I'm going to go with the voice approach today so they can keep looking at your beautiful face. Thank you for that lovely introduction. So I'm really pleased to be here today. Thank you so much for the invitation. Just a little bit of background on the work that I did at CLASS specifically on these issues is really in the space of leveraging public benefits such as SNAP, TANF, childcare, housing subsidies, really addressing students' most basic needs for food and childcare and housing, and trying to think of that as really a fifth pillar of comprehensive financial aid. So you have the traditional methods, you know, loans, grants, institutional assistance, and what we had been doing at CLASS was working in three states, Colorado, Louisiana, and Rhode Island, on technical assistance to help these states think about how are they aligning their post-secondary policies. Most states have set attainment goals, and how are they looking at reducing students' basic needs and security through access to public benefits to really promote those attainment goals. We know a lot of the reason that students are not able to persist and complete is not because they're not academically capable, it's because they have a, you know, myriad of issues that they're running into in their personal and professional lives that are getting in the way of their ability to be successful in school. So I'll give you an example of Colorado. We were working with the Department of Higher Education and the Department of Human Services, and we did a comprehensive policy scan and made suggestions for them to be able to look at where is their misalignment and what stakeholders and people do they need to bring to the table to address that misalignment. And obviously a large stakeholder that needed to be at that table was students. They already knew that. They didn't need a lot of convincing in that regard. So I think what I would highlight in the Colorado example is, you know, students are obviously the most important voice of what their own experiences are on campus and off of campus. So what can you really think about in terms of engaging with policy beyond that campus landscape? You've already hit on several of those. You're talking to policymakers, you're talking to legislators, and one of the things that, you know, we would like to highlight is it's not really sexy to talk about administrative policy, but the importance of administrative policy, and I'll give you a couple examples, and you'll hear from somebody from Massachusetts. They've done amazing work in this space, but there are several rules in the federal statute for SNAP eligibility for students that states actually have a significant amount of flexibility to be able to change and make those policies more friendly so students can have access to SNAP. So one example would be leveraging state work study funds and allowing students who are approved for work study but have not yet been placed in a work study position access to SNAP. We know that work study positions are underfunded and very limited access based on the people who actually need them. So this is a combination of, if I'm thinking about where you start out and kind of your institutional landscape, you're already talking to obviously your institutional leaders. You're talking to, you know, people on campus who can make decisions and get things done. To the degree that you're not already inviting both your state and federal policymakers to literally every single event that you have. All of your state and federal policymakers have district offices, and the more that you can engage them and invite them to events and engage them in the issues that you are advocating for, the more that you're creating a larger pool of people who care about your issue. Now, certainly we can invite people, and if they don't attend, that's, you know, that's their decision, or that is, you know, their limited scheduling availability. But as a student advocate, at least you have the ability to say, I invited them, I did what I could for my part in that. And then we talk about what are we looking at the state level in terms of administrative policy. So I think of policy in terms of like big P policy, legislation, things like that. Little P policy can be, you know, what are your local human service offices policies in verifying a student's eligibility? They have a lot of discretion over the documentation and the other things that they have to verify for a student that would make it easier for them to get access to SNAP. One of the things that we lifted up in Colorado was Colorado is a county administered state, which means counties actually have quite a bit of authority over the program application and, you know, some of those processes. But, you know, how are those local human services offices partnering with post-secondary institutions in their counties to say, you know, how are we getting students access to SNAP? How are we working together to streamline that process? Where are we seeing barriers? One of the first rules that you'll learn in any policy advocacy space is you can't make a friend when you need a friend. So it's about formulating partnerships and it's about formulating connections before a problem arises. So by the time you get to a point where there's an issue, you've already been able to establish the relationship and the connection to be able to work through that in a way that doesn't seem confrontational. I know that human services offices often feel like they are the brunt of a lot of people's frustrations. And that's why some of these partnership opportunities are really important. One of the other things that I would highlight are your state human services and state higher education agencies. So every year, both of those agencies go through planning processes, they identify priorities. To the degree you can figure out how you can be at the table when those conversations are being had, or ensure that a student voice is being represented when they're deciding policies that affect your future, those are also really useful opportunities. Now, particularly in the aspect of human service offices, they have to submit state plans, and the frequency of that state plan varies depending on the program. Sometimes it's 5 years. States can decide to combine their SNAP and TANF and WIOA, which is the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act program, which provides a lot of job training dollars. But you also have the ability to be at the table or ensure somebody is at the table when those conversations are being had, particularly in an environment such as this where federally there's so much division among what the right thing to do should be. Working with your state agency and legislative officials is more important than ever. And obviously, you know all about the opportunities to engage in, you know, voting and ensuring that student issues are on, you know, people who are running for offices platforms and making sure that student issues get raised in your town halls, attending town halls. Those are some really important opportunities that I think often get overlooked when we're talking about what can we do to influence policy. It's certainly not as sexy as influencing legislation, but some of those administrative policies that really make a difference in not who's eligible. We already know there are a lot of students that are eligible for, let's just say, SNAP that don't have access to it, but it's making sure that they can get through the barriers and the hurdles to actually get access, which is really important and varies widely by state. Maddie, am I at time?
Just about.
Okay, great. So I'll hand it back over to you and I'll just keep the rest of my comments to see if there's questions.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that distinction between like the big P and the little P, because a lot of it can feel so unapproachable. So thank you so much. And I would now love to introduce Alana Davidson. Alana has had a leadership trajectory not unlike a lot of our student leaders. As an undergrad at the University of New Hampshire, she founded the Campus Food Insecurity Task Force and Swipe It Forward. And she was ignited by her work as an undergrad and is now the SNAP Outreach Interagency Specialist at the Massachusetts Department of Transitional Assistance. So Alana, thank you so much for joining us.
Can you all hear me?
Yeah, okay.
Hi, thank you all for having me. I'm so excited to be on the call. I do want to just start with a brief disclosure that I am talking today on behalf of myself and not on behalf of the Department of the Transitional Department of Assistance in Massachusetts. And I've been asked today to talk a little bit about my story and the work that I did kind of in New Hampshire. And I always like to start that story too by just acknowledging the privilege that I've had in my life that has affected my story, and the fact that I was working full time, I was in school full time and able to do research and advocacy as a student without having to work part-time or full-time in order to go to school. So I do want to point that out, that my story might be different than others, just on the, you know, my background. And so I, as an undergrad, was conducting research on college food insecurity on my campus. This was a little over four or five years ago. Time flies. kind of at the time when a lot of research on this was just coming out and just starting to be talked about in the national space. At the time, I had found one in four respondents of my campus-wide survey were food insecure. And I had kind of taken that data. I was part of a scholars program and happened to be in the room with the university president one day. Was like, this is never gonna happen again. And decided to go up to him and introduce myself and say, you know, I was working on this research and this is preliminary data, but we have found this so far. And he told me if I had asked if I had talked to the dean of students about it. And I was like, no, you know, I haven't done that, because at the time that would have never occurred to me to do something like that. I was a sophomore in college and, you know, that's not something you typically are doing. So kudos to all of you who are out there on the front lines every day. It's not easy and can be very intimidating. And so that was kind of my door open, though. So I emailed the dean of students and said that the president had sent me to him and said that we should sit down and meet, which is not his exact words, but, you know, it still worked. And so I was able to meet with him and kind of talk to him about the results and the hopes for things. And he was not at the time, you know, that opened to things. He certainly acknowledged it was an issue and there was things we could do, but, you know, there was not going to be a task force at the time or other things. And at the time, I was also working on a presidential campaign. This was 2015, 2016 in New Hampshire. So things were happening, as you can imagine. And one day I found myself in a room with the governor of New Hampshire at the time, Maggie Hassan, and was like, okay, when am I ever going to see this woman again? So sometimes it's the right place at the right time. And I went over to her and I told her about my results, and she was shocked. She was shocked. And so she then called UNH and said, what are you doing about this? And then the dean of students called me and was like, okay, you know, let's get to work to really address this. And so that kind of opened the door to the university really wanting to tackle this in some ways throughout the whole process. And then after, it's still, you know, a compromise. A lot of the language used around these types of programs is similar to the language you'll hear around SNAP, or what used to be called food stamps, in the respect of, we don't want students just living off the program. or we want to make sure only those who really need it are getting it, or, you know, other things like that. And there were a lot of things I would have wanted to do. One of the big things we had been trying to push before I left was that a lot of the people using the local food pantry were staff at the university. They were contracted employees. And that was not a conversation that the dean of that leadership was ready to have at that time. And so we took, you know, our wins with our losses, and we were able to launch Swipe It Forward while I was there and promote the food pantry more. And we're looking at doing stuff on food waste and, you know, some other things, which is great and really important for the students who are hungry right then. But, you know, it's harder to then have those underlying conversations about why are students food insecure to begin with. And, you know, how we address policies to really do those underlying things. And so I've kind of found the two big things that really helped me. One was data. So having that data to talk to the president, it sounds like you all are doing kind of that side of it. I found I did a lot of qualitative interviews with food insecure students, and having those quotes, those stories, for maybe if it, you know, if I was trying to be intentional about who was in the room, who was not in the room, but sometimes you just end up where you are. And so making sure I had the voices of other students with me, because I was coming from a place of privilege where I had not experienced that myself. And so I did not want to make sure that it was coming from my perspective was really important. And I think was kind of powerful for some of that leadership to hear. We had one senior member who said, you know, I've been working here 30 years and I've never thought of this and no one's ever talked to me about this, which I'm sure you can all relate to, as well as kind of the media side of it. You know, we published a bunch of articles in our student newspaper on the data, on what the campus was doing. You know, I went to the leadership as, you know, this is a, here's all of these articles of what other schools are doing. We're behind and it's gonna look really good for the university if we do something. And I, you know, when things kind of faded away, I would kind of start emailing, you know, the task force and the dean of students being like, here's five new, you know, articles that have come out in the last 2 weeks alone. You know, what are we doing? Can we do more? And so it's just, you know, it's a give or take, Swipe It Forward. We give students 40 meals, you get 40 free meals in the dining hall, which is it's a decent amount. But for someone whom this is more of a long-term issue while they're in school, that's not really the solution. And the university at the time, I'm not sure since, but at the time was not open to giving students, you know, usually more than those 40 meals. Also being conscious of, we don't want this to then affect their financial aid if they're getting too much assistance. And that's kind of when you can gear students towards SNAP, which, you know, is a more reliable federal program if they qualify for more of a long-term, you know, issue for a few months or something. But yeah, I don't know if we're out of time, but I,
That was great. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your experience. And yeah, just a lot about like seizing the opportunities and especially the power of data and kind of leveraging the moment and the momentum around the issue for sure. So thank you so much. And I would love to open it up for Q&A for Carrie and Alana. And you can unmute yourself to ask a question, or you can type it in the box and I can read it out loud. If anyone wants to jump in.
Hi, okay, so we have a question. So how do we start to figure out what like Tennessee specific policies where there's wiggle room surrounding eligibility for SNAP programs? You know, like how do we kind of start that process? Is it best just to like reach out to like the state government? What would you suggest?
This is Carrie. What I would say is you can, so there's a couple of places where you might find that information. I would start with the Human Services website to see if they publish what their rules and regulations are on student eligibility. Some states do a better job than others of being transparent about their state plans and their policies. And frankly, it's probably just an issue of, you know, resources to continue to update it. But I would start with their website, and then I would also look into the state plan. The state plan is going to spell out specifically what the the priorities are. And what we found in some of the states we worked in is there were some deficit-based assumptions about public benefit users that they would even just spell out in the state plans that, you know, when we talk about stigma and we talk about narrative shift and we talk about, you know, asset-based framing when we're talking about students and their basic needs and security, the fact that some of these perceptions are embedded in state policy plans can be problematic, which you can also flag in your advocacy efforts. So I would look at the state plans. You can also look at their published statutes or regulations. And if you're not able to find that available data publicly, you most certainly can go to the government agency and make a specific request for it. I'm pretty sure that they are obligated to provide that for you. Did that answer your question?
Yes, that did. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just pulled up the plan right here.
Wonderful. Happy reading.
We also have one question for Elena. So you talked a little bit about like how you ended up in a situation where you ended up speaking to the governor, and that kind of got your administration to start looking at food insecurity more. And that's, we're kind of in a similar situation that there has been some movement on our campus, and there's some openness to expanding food insecurity programs, but what they're doing isn't really enough in our opinion, especially because we have such a high rate of food insecurity on our campus that's been researched specifically on our campus. So we're starting to look at more working with the state government and the Board of Trustees. Did you face any adversity from your school's administration when they learned that you were speaking to other people, or were they more open to, how do you navigate that relationship, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. If they had concerns that I was talking to the governor, they did not share that with me. It all actually was, it happened within a week. I talked to the governor one day, and within 3 days, I had the dean of students emailing me to set up a meeting to talk. But it was kind of keeping that momentum after that initial, oh my gosh, the governor is talking to us about this, and kind of, you know, over time. And so I worked hard to continue also the relationship with the governor's office after that, and following up with her office and talking with her staff and saying, hey, we had this conversation, I just wanted to follow up and share the actual data so you had it. And then setting up a call with her education advisor to kind of update her on how things were going was kind of helpful as well. And I think, you know, the university doesn't expect, you know, this data is public knowledge. And so they're going to expect people to be out there talking about it. And so it's, we can frame this in a good way is look at what we're doing, or we can frame this in a bad way about nothing is happening. And we've already, you know, had conversations, and where are we going from here? And so I think a lot of it was kind of that great initial thing, but then it was, you know, being on top of people and being persistent and making sure that there's people and champions in place who are passionate and care about this issue, so that when you graduate or move on or other things, that there's always people in place to kind of keep pushing it forward, because it does take time and it does take a lot of work.
Okay, cool.
That answer your question?
Yes, yeah, for sure.
Hi, this is Rachel from Swipe Out Hunger. I have a quick question, Carrie. You mentioned inviting and connecting with folks from the state or the county human services office and other community leaders. What would be the way that we would like Google that office to find those contact people? What is the office usually called, or is there like a place we can find their contact info?
Oh, Rachel, that's such a great question. So what the human service agency calls themselves in most states is going to vary. I would probably start, if you're looking to contact an agency official, by, you know, looking up something like, am I eligible for SNAP? And that's probably going to pull up your state benefits website, which will allow you to drill into where you can find contacts in terms of the human services offices. I think you were also asking a question about elected officials. Is that correct?
I think the county was like the one I was most uncertain about, but any information on who would be the right people to kind of put this work on their radar?
Yeah, I mean, so depending on who the person is, there may or may not want their information publicly available for people to be able to contact them. In those state plans, there's probably going to be some information about who put them together or who you can contact for additional information. If there's a specific question, I'm happy to try to field it and dig into it for you. Or if the students have, you know, a couple of places that they're looking into, I'm happy to do some poking around and see what I can find. But I would definitely start with, you know, many states are not county administered, so you're probably going to be finding better information at the state level in terms of specific policies. But several states are county administered, and I can share a resource that identifies which states those are. You know, Colorado, California, Ohio, Virginia. There's a handful that are county administered that you're going to get further ahead with the administrative policy at the county level. I'm sorry, that was not a cleaner answer.
I think that your tip of just Googling, like, am I eligible, and then finding out what website has that information and then going backwards from there is a great tip. Thank you.
Yeah, sure thing.
I do also have just two other resources in that realm. If you go on the Center for Budget and Policy Priority, CBPP's SNAP page, they have a state section, and then they have a kind of tool that you can go through by state, and they actually list the policies and procedures manual for the state, and the website for the state SNAP agency is all there. And then something else that I'm not sure if you all have seen is the Government Accountability Office, GAO, released a report last year on SNAP and students, specifically looking at student rules, what states are doing around it, who's eligible, how many people aren't participating but should be. And so that's also a great resource to kind of see kind of where your state is and have an examples of what other states are doing that your state could be doing.
I have a question about, in both of your experiences, how you've seen the most powerful tools to activate students on campus around policies. So I know you both had mentioned like town halls and campaigns, but I'm wondering if there's any specific examples where you've seen that leverage of building your base on campus be really successful.
I found for this issue, it's all in the way that you frame it when talking to other students. Food connects to everything. Everyone has to eat. And so that's kind of a nice bridge to other clubs and groups that are working on other things that aren't necessarily, you know, SNAP or food related, but how would we talk about in the larger context? We're talking about college food insecurity, but we're really talking about other social justice issues. And so how can we connect this to other things that campus is doing around climate change and environmental justice? How can we connect this, you know, to housing issues and housing rights? And so there's a bunch of ways that you can kind of reach out and bring other groups together to really have a more holistic conversation about campus well-being, which is like a, I feel like a huge realm nowadays is talking about overall campus well-being. And we have such high suicide rates and mental health issues, and, you know, food is integral to having good mental health. And so just kind of bringing students together from all these different areas and talking with students who work in health services, and, you know, are you screening for food insecurity at health services, and how can we talk to our coaches for our athletes and make sure they have access to food, and just kind of, you know, working that leverage between all the different things, because whether people realize it or not, they're talking about this issue and their work is affecting this issue. And so just kind of educating students on that, because even though they may not be hungry or food insecure, I'm sure they know other people who are struggling and aren't, you know, and how we reduce that stigma.
I co-sign on all of that. And I would also say that, you know, the stigma piece is large, and it's already difficult as a student to feel like you fit in on campus as it is, whatever your background or, you know, orientation is. And Alana's, you know, approach of intersectionality makes a lot of sense. But the ability to talk about, you know, we've had this narrative out in the environment for a long time that it's somehow funny or acceptable to be a starving college student. And, you know, we have to, in our own conversations and in our own circles and on our own campuses, rethink that and to be able to talk about, you know, the lack of having access to food, let alone proper nutrition, that it's actually not funny. And, you know, for middle income and upper income white students, that can be a funny one-off. But for students from communities of color, for student parents, for students that are first generation and who are low income, it's not funny. And it very much reduces their experience to nothing but a cliche talking point. So I would say looking at those cultural aspects and being able to dispel the notion that starving is just part of the college experience is really important.
Any other questions for Alana and Carrie before we wrap up? Cool. Well, thank you both so much for your insight and for sharing so much. This just touched on a lot of what I think student leaders are thinking about and how to best present all of this to folks on their campus, as well as legislators and policymakers. So thank you so, so much. Moving forward, I would love for the webinars, as we're kind of like feeling them out, to be a place also for students to share out, kind of like University of Tennessee Knoxville did today. So I'm making sure to keep that front of mind. Thank you all who joined, and we really appreciate all of your leadership.
Thank you all so much.
Bye, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks.